This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We've tried to be candid in sharing our best advice, namely that this military conflict, if it continues, will have disastrous consequences for Ethiopia's unity, territorial integrity, and stability.
That's U.S. Special Envoy to the Horn of Africa, Jeffrey Feltman, scheduled to visit Ethiopia today and tomorrow on America's advice regarding the expanding conflict in the country. Details coming up. Also, Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates have joined the U.S. and Britain in urging Sudan's military leaders to restore the country's civilian-led transitional government. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. The State Department says U.S. Special Envoy to the Horn of Africa, Jeffrey Feltman, will travel to Ethiopia today and tomorrow after rebel forces from the northern Tigray region said they were moving towards the capital and the government in Addis Ababa declared a state of emergency. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
On Thursday, Ethiopia marks the one-year anniversary of brutal fighting between government forces aligned with Eritrean forces and rebels in the northern Tigray region. Now, rebel forces say they are advancing on the capital, Addis Ababa, and that it could fall within months or even weeks. Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed vowed that his government will prevail.
Ethiopia will not collapse. Ethiopia will prosper. Ethiopia will forever exist with her honor by defeating all who test her throughout the blood and bones of her children.
As residents of the capital read in their newspapers, the Ethiopian government declared a state of emergency and called on residents to defend their neighborhood if rebels arrive in the capital. The president of the Tigray region, Debretsion Gebremichael, blamed the Ethiopian government and their allies for the suffering.
The warmongers decided to continue with the war, and we entered into this war because the only option we had is to destroy our enemies by force.
State Department spokesperson Ned Price called on all the warring parties to end the fighting and protect the lives and rights of citizens. He said the State Department has now updated the travel advisory for Ethiopia to level 4.
What that means is we are advising U.S. citizens do not travel to Ethiopia. We are recommending that U.S. citizens in Ethiopia consider departing now using commercial options that remain available.
The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Michelle Bachelet, said the year-long conflict was marked by extreme brutality.
We have reasonable grounds to believe that during this period, all parties to the Tigray conflict have committed violations of international human rights, humanitarian, and refugee law. Some of these may amount to war crimes and crimes against humanity. Civilians in Tigray have been subjected to brutal violence and suffering.
A report by the UN Human Rights Office with the government-created Ethiopian Human Rights Commission found that sexual violence has been rampant in the conflict, detailing reports of gang rapes by various parties against women and girls, but also against men and boys. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
The United States is ratcheting up pressure on the Ethiopian government as the war that began in its Tigray region continues to escalate. President Joe Biden on Tuesday said he's decided to cut Ethiopia out of a U.S. trade program, setting the path for further sanctions against the African nation. VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shinawi has the details.
In a letter to Congress, U.S. President Joe Biden said Ethiopia has not met requirements to remain a beneficiary of the African Growth and Opportunity Act. The program provides sub-Saharan African nations duty-free access to the United States, if they meet certain requirements, including making progress toward political pluralism. The action goes into effect on January 1st. The president said Ethiopia has committed gross violations of internationally recognized human rights. Biden's announcement came just before the first anniversary of the war's beginning. The U.S. Special Envoy to the Horn of Africa, Jeffrey Feltman, said Tuesday that Ethiopian officials were warned in June that their country's relations with the United States were at a crossroads. That crossroads, he said, are behind us. Feltman said the parties to the conflict in Ethiopia do not seem anywhere near a ceasefire or talks, and called the humanitarian conditions in Tigray unacceptable. He was speaking at an event at the U.S. Institute of Peace in Washington. The envoy said the Biden administration called for Ethiopian authorities and the Tigrayan People's Liberation Front, the TPLF, to take urgent steps to end the conflict, enable humanitarian access, and protect civilians.
The administration has consistently sought to engage the government of Ethiopia and encourage a different path. As true partners should, we've tried to be candid in sharing our best advice, namely that this military conflict, if it continues, will have disastrous consequences for Ethiopia's unity, territorial integrity, and stability, and also for Ethiopia's relations with the United States and the international community.
The war began on November 4, 2020, when Ethiopian federal troops attacked TPLF locations. Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed said they were responding to TPLF attacks on federal military bases. After quickly capturing the Tigray capital, Mekelle, the Ethiopian forces became bogged down fighting the resistance, and in the past 2 months, TPLF troops have advanced into neighboring regions. Thousands of civilians have died in the conflict and tens of thousands displaced. Ethiopia's government on Tuesday declared a state of emergency as TPLF troops threatened to move on the capital. The United States has warned that the Tigray forces, who long dominated the national government before Abiy Ahmed took office, against any attempt to besiege Addis Ababa after seizing control in recent days of the strategic cities of Desai and Kombucha. The U.S. State Department has warned Americans not to travel to Ethiopia or to leave the country if they are there because of the escalating conflict. The U.S. and United Nations have accused Ethiopian authorities of preventing passage of trucks carrying food and other aid into Tigray. The Addis Ababa government, however, says Tigray forces are blocking access, stealing aid, and not letting trucks return from Tigray to get more supplies. Feltman said the U.S. is alarmed by the worsening situation, referring not only to the blockade on aid to Tigray, but also the Tigray forces' push into the neighboring Amhara and Afar regions, widening the humanitarian crisis.
That expansion of the war, however, is as predictable as it is unacceptable, given that the Ethiopian government began cutting off humanitarian relief and commercial access to Tigray in June, which continues to this day despite horrifying conditions of reported widespread famine and near-famine conditions that have shocked the world. In Tigray, 90% of the population requires aid, and up to 900,000 people are facing famine-like conditions.
Feltman said, "No government can tolerate an armed insurgency, but no government should engage in mass starvation against its own citizens." The U.S. Special Envoy is set to arrive in Ethiopia Thursday to attempt to de-escalate a civil conflict. His visit comes shortly after the government urged residents of Addis Ababa to arm themselves against advancing TPLF troops. Mohammed El-Shinawi, VOA News, Washington.
The United Nations warns that several million people in northern Ethiopia face severe food insecurity as fighting between government forces and the Tigray People's Liberation Front escalates. From Nairobi, VOA's Ruben Chama reports.
Aid workers say a lack of access continues to prevent urgently needed supplies from reaching Tigray, while a severe fuel shortage has caused relief organizations to significantly scale down or suspend most operations in the region. Saviano Abreu is the spokesperson for the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs.
The UN and humanitarian organizations in Ethiopia were facing major challenges to operate and to deliver the life-saving assistance that people desperately need. Unfortunately, the level of assistance that we are able to provide now in Tigray, in Amhara, and Afar is not anywhere close to what is needed.
The UN humanitarian spokesman says severe food insecurity is affecting up to 7 million people, combined with malnutrition and water shortages in the regions of Afar, Amhara, and Tigray.
That's why we reiterate once again our urgent calls on all parties to the conflict to enable the rapid and unimpeded passage of relief supplies of aid workers to all affected areas. So people impacted by the fighting, people caught out in the conflict, including those affected by the recent escalation in Amhara and Afar, they can receive the assistance, the aid that they desperately need.
Speaking to reporters Tuesday, the U.S. Special Envoy for the Horn of Africa, Jeffrey Feltman, said he regrets that escalating hostilities in northern Ethiopia have exacerbated humanitarian needs and limited the ability to reach populations in need.
Whether we're talking about access in northern Ethiopia, in Tigray, or we're talking about increased numbers of displaced in the federal Ethiopian state of Amhara by TPLF military advances, we are alarmed. It's a number of factors, including fighting, but it's mostly government restrictions, bureaucratic restrictions that have prevented the type of humanitarian access from getting to the people of Tigray, and we see signs of famine and near-famine conditions.
The veteran U.S. diplomat added that the plight of millions of people suffering from various stages of food insecurity now could be addressed if the government would allow the assistance to flow. He said the situation is getting worse, with hundreds of thousands of internally displaced persons fleeing the military advances of the Tigray People's Liberation Front.
We're calling on all parties to this conflict to find ways to de-escalate the situation, allow the humanitarian access to flow to those in need, be they in Amhara state, be they in Tigray, be they in a far state, and move toward a negotiated ceasefire. The situation is dire, and it is getting worse.
The federal government of Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed has been fighting TPLF forces in Tigray for the past year. On Tuesday, the Ethiopian federal government declared a nationwide state of emergency as its army and Tigrayan forces began their second year of conflict. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, which enjoy close ties with Sudan's military, have joined the U.S. and Britain in urging the leaders of last week's military takeover to restore the country's civilian-led transitional government. A joint statement by the U.S. State Department also encourages the release of all those detained. It urges all to ensure that peace and security for the people of Sudan is a top priority. The joint statement, according to the Associated Press, will likely put pressure on General Abdel Fattah Burhan and his deputy, General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, to give concessions during ongoing negotiations to find a way out of the crisis. Both Burhan and Dagalo are close allies with Saudi Arabia and the UAE. The military takeover by the generals has threatened to derail Sudan's already fragile transition to democracy and further inflame the volatile Horn of Africa. The final results of Monday's local government elections in South Africa are in, with the ruling African National Congress getting only 46% of the vote. This is the first time it's dipped below 50% since it became the country's first democratic government in 1994, following decades of white minority rule. In an unprecedented development, the ANC will be forced into coalitions with smaller parties in almost all major cities and scores of towns if it is to hold on to power in those areas. Here's Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
There it was on TV this morning, the shocking news that the Opposition Democratic Alliance, the DA, had received almost 40% of the vote and the ANC 39.4% in the city that bears the name of the ANC's iconic former leader, Nelson Mandela. The ANC's loss in Nelson Mandela Bay was a narrow one. But for analysts, it represents a seismic shift in South Africa's political landscape and a stark symbol of the chasm that's developed between Africa's oldest liberation movement turned political party and the people it claims to represent. Civil society groups say voters are finally punishing the ANC for decades of poor service delivery, failure to create jobs, and corruption. But speaking to the media at the Independent Electoral Commission Centre in the city of Tshwane, ANC Acting Secretary General Jesse Duarte brushed off the party's poor performance.
The preliminary results indicate that we will have more hung councils than in the previous local elections. This will necessitate the need for coalitions or other forms of cooperation with other political formations. This is nothing new. We have done so since 1994.
Duarte wasn't prepared to say which parties the ANC is willing to work with or what it's willing to offer them in exchange for staying at the helm of major cities such as Johannesburg, Durban, and Nelson Mandela Bay.
The ANC's approach to coalitions remain based on principle, not expediency, and guided by the spirit, mandate, and interest of the voters.
But an increasing number of leaders of smaller political parties, such as Action SA's Herman Mashaba, seem bent on isolating the ruling party.
I want to make it clear, if I've got to do it 1,000 times, I've got to do it 1,000,000 times, or I've got to do 100,000,000 times, fellow South Africans, Action SA will never go into a coalition with the ANC under no circumstances.
The Freedom Front Plus, a conservative, almost exclusively white Afrikaner party, doubled its share of the vote to 5.5% when compared with 2016. A result which leader Pieter Groenewald knows allows it to be a potential kingmaker in several municipalities.
We are available as far as coalitions are concerned. I am on record, and it is still the same. We will not go in any coalition with the ANC or where the EFF is concerned, because we don't share the same principles. The ANC, as far as they're concerned, they're so corrupt.
The Economic Freedom Fighters, the EFF, got more than 10% of the national vote, and in a lot of wards is the third biggest party. Deputy leader Floyd Shivambu says it'll put anyone into power, including the ANC, if it means leadership positions for EFF officials.
The EFF wants to be part of government now. We didn't become part of government after the 2016 local government elections. So we want to see EFF mayors and EFF members of mayoral committees. We want to see EFF speakers of municipalities.
Analysts expect the ANC support will continue to wane until a single opposition party trusted by citizens rises to claim victory in a national poll. But until then, coalitions, characterized by infighting, will run local governments, and delivery of basic services will remain as bad as it's been under the ANC, and perhaps worse. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Security has been beefed up at the University of Abuja after the abduction of staff and children in Nigeria's capital in the latest school kidnapping in the country. From Abuja, Munachi Chooks tells us more.
The bandits were said to have stormed the university staff quarters in Abuja's Giri neighborhood and were holding lecturers and their families hostage. Speaking to VOA, university spokesperson Dr. Habib Yakub confirmed the kidnapping and said six people were taken into the forest.
Early hours of Tuesday, some gunmen numbering probably about 40 stormed the university staff quarters, shooting randomly. Immediately we got the report, our safety officers informed security agencies, and they came to give support.
Yakub says the attack created panic in the university community, which is gradually settling down.
The situation is calm, but as you rightly know, it was a sad day for all of us, a very sad day indeed, and people are just trying to come to terms with what actually happened. It was shocking, but life is relatively normal there now.
Meanwhile, security has been beefed up in the university community. The Abuja Commission of Police, Sunday Babaji, has assured the public that the perpetrators would be arrested.
When we received the distress call of sporadic shooting in the university quarters here, Giri, so we mobilized, we sent reinforcement, we called our sister agency, 176 Battalion, who also came to our aids, together with the internal security of the university. They've been on the trail of the hoodlums and those kidnapped, and they are on their trail. By the grace of God, we will rescue them.
There have been conflicting reports that the kidnappers are demanding about $5 million for the freedom of the Abuja University staff and children, while another report says that the abducted staff and children have been released. Speaking to VOA this morning via phone, the Abuja police spokesperson, Josephine Ade, said the kidnapped victims have not been released.
It's not true. And the demand, I can't comment on that because the school authority did not brief me of any demand. So I don't know where that one is coming from. Me too, I heard it. I'm trying to confirm if that is true.
Several parts of Nigeria are facing worsening security challenges and spikes in crimes as security operatives battle to halt the menace. Most of the attacks in schools or universities occur in the north of the country and are committed by bandits or extremists linked to the radical Boko Haram terror group who demand exorbitant ransoms. Some observers say, however, that this is a rare and daring assault on what is generally considered to be a very secure city. The fear this assault is proof that insecurity in Nigeria is spreading. For VOA News, Munachi Chooks.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 1705 UTC on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat and dumbolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC.